As Rav Nafsa mentioned, the Mishnah in Masechet Chulin, Daf Nun Tet, lists four physical characteristics through which kosher birds can be identified. We do not, the Ashkenazi community and the majority of the Sephardi community, does not rely on the physical characteristics described in the Mishnah and the Gemara in Chulin, but rather, as Rav Nafsan said, we only eat a bird if there's a Mesorah, if there is a tradition that the Jews have that these birds are kosher. And what it means that there's a tradition that these birds are kosher, the Torah in Sefer Vayikra and Sefer Devarim has a list of the non-kosher birds. Altogether, there are 24 birds which are not kosher, and any bird that's not either a species of or one of those 24 not kosher birds, by process of elimination, is kosher. Just by doing the simple math, that means of all the tens of thousands of species of birds in the world, the overwhelming majority are kosher, and you just have a very small minority of birds which are not kosher. The Mesorah that Rav Nafsan was referring to means that the Jewish people were certain that a specific bird is not among the birds listed and prohibited in the Torah. Obviously, going back to the time of the Gemara, there was a long list of birds that we knew was kosher. And as history progressed, the list got smaller and smaller and smaller. What we have presented behind me in these cages represents, with three exceptions, every single bird that any Jewish community that currently exists has a Mesorah for eating. That means that not all of these birds does everyone accept as kosher, but even isolated Jewish communities that had a Mesorah specific bird as kosher, we have it represented here. And if you read the pamphlet, you can get some indication of how accepted the birds are. We also have various testimonies in this booklet from the Rabbanim and the Shochtim of those communities. And this is it. Of all the birds in the world, these are the only birds, except for the three, that we know are kosher, or somebody somewhere was able to preserve the Mesorah. And all the other birds are a mystery. We're not sure if they're kosher. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. And as Rav Nassan told us, they're a mapaskin, we can't eat them. I want to recognize the presence here of Rabbi Arya Greenspan, who spent a lot of time researching and actually taking me around Israel and teaching me about some of the more exotic birds here, that there were isolated communities that ate them. And he's an absolute expert in birds, and you can feel free to speak to him, and you can also read the signs. You probably noticed that we do not have a turkey here in Yonah Diyoma, but we don't have it. There are really two reasons we don't have it. First of all, it really doesn't have a Mesorah, as Rav Nassim mentioned. And the other reason is they're really big, and we're trying to keep the mess and the smell at a minimum. So if you want to see what a turkey is, in a few hours you'll be eating one, and we'll leave it at that. We also don't have geese here, for the same reason. And we do not have sparrows here, even though they're very small, because we couldn't get the legal thumbs up in terms of the anti-poaching laws. Nobody sells sparrows, and I could catch one, but I don't want to create more legal problems than necessary. But if you want to see what a sparrow is, again, feel free to go outside, and I'm sure you'll know what a sparrow is. Rav Nassan already spoke about the turkey. I think it bears mentioning, though, the tshuva of the Netziv in Meshiv Davar, Simon Chaf Beis. When the Netziv was asked about the turkey, his response tells us a lot about the Mesorah. And he told the people, he said, if you had originally come to me and asked me about the turkey, I would have ostered it. I would not have permitted the consumption of the turkey. But now, the Netziv was in the 1800s, now that you're asking me about the turkey and everybody's eating it, if I oster the turkey, that means that I'm being motzi laz, I'm saying that all the people who ate turkey weren't keeping kosher. And the Netziv said to turn the kosher world upside down and to take a bird that the majority of Klal Yisrael are eating and start saying that it's not kosher, that the Netziv felt we cannot do unless we have conclusive proof that this bird is one of the 24 birds listed in the Torah. The Netziv writes that since we don't have any clear indication that the bird is not kosher, and as Rav Nassim mentioned, the turkey has all the same money cautious of a chicken, the Netziv felt that since it was accepted as kosher, we cannot remove it from its status as a kosher bird without further evidence. The turkey is not the only domesticated New World bird. There's another pretty popular New World bird for those people that like duck, and it's known as the Muscovite duck. We have the Muscovite duck in the cage all the way at the end. You can see the Muscovite on the right, my right, and right next to it is a Peking duck, which is on my left. You could come up after I finish speaking, we'll have a brief interlude, or you could see on the papers, or hopefully if you could see over there. The Muscovite duck was domesticated by the South American Indians, and the Peking duck, the duck on the left, closest to the wall, that is a duck which is accepted. It's the Peking duck, the Long Island Peking duck. It's accepted as kosher by everybody. As you can see, the ducks are almost identical. Probably, if you're not sitting all the way up front, you'd say you can't tell the difference. And if you get a really close look, you'll also have trouble telling the difference. These ducks present an interesting genetic situation. My father's really the expert on genetics here, but if you were to hybridize those two ducks, two white ducks, one is a Peking duck, one is a Muscovite duck, the result is a monstrosity, a really big, clumsy duck, full of all kinds of colors, and it's sterile. So even though this duck is similar to the Peking duck, genetically it's not similar. It's not really that similar. The Tour, quoting his father, the Rosh, this is in Simon Pei Beis, quoting the Raza, the Baal HaMor, who quotes an ancient Jewish tradition, writes that any bird that has a duck-like beak and a duck-like foot probably is kosher, depending on how you understand it. Basically, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. The Muscovite duck, it looks like a duck, but interestingly enough, it does not walk or quack like a duck. It's a tree duck, which means if we were to release the two birds, which we will not do, Rabbi Shur, don't worry, but if we were to release these two ducks, the Peking duck would run on the floor, and the Muscovite duck would fly to the highest perch it could get to. Also, if they help us out during the presentation, if you listen to the sounds, the Peking duck quacks, it's a duck, and the Muscovite duck does not quack, it hisses. The Muscovite duck made its debut in Europe in a sort of circuitous route because it was imported by the Spaniards when they conquered South America, and it somehow became very popular in North Africa. And the Ottoman Empire, as you know, historically in the 1600s was sort of still in existence, and through those trade routes, it actually debuted in Muscovite before it was really popular in Western Europe. And some people think that's the reason it's called the Muscovite duck. Other people are not so sure. And the Jewish communities actually of Ukraine, they accepted the Muscovite duck as kosher. However, as you know, in the 1860s there was a major war, the opening shots of which were fired by Rabbi Illowy, the Duck Wars. And he was the rabbi in New Orleans. And when he took the pulpit in New Orleans, he saw the Jews eating Muscovite duck. And he felt that the Muscovite duck was not kosher. Now, there had been a number of tshuvos written about Muscovite ducks prior to Rabbi Illowy, but there is a major problem with understanding the tshuvos of the Muscovite duck. And that, how do you describe in writing a duck that looks like all the other ducks? So if you look through the tshuvos, and we have a source book which has many, many of those tshuvos, it's not clear if they're talking about a Muscovite duck, a different kind of duck, or perhaps a goose. Rabbi Illowy, since he was a rabbi in North America, he wrote in English. And it's very clear that he was talking about the Muscovite duck, because in his Hebrew tshuva, he writes in parentheses, Muscovite. So there's no controversy. And in the response that he got, they also said Muscovite in English letters, something close to that, in parentheses. When Rabbi Illowy took the pulpit in New Orleans, as we said, he saw people eating the Muscovite duck, and he felt it was not a permitted species. His reasoning is not clear. He sent the Shaila to Rabbi Hirsch of Germany and to Rav Nosson Adler, the chief rabbi of London. And both of them replied that the Muscovite duck was forbidden. A few years later, in 1904, the Jews of Argentina had been eating the Muscovite duck. Argentina, South America, the South American Indians had been eating them for a long time. It was readily available. And when Baron de Hirsch was trying to establish a Jewish colony in Argentina, he also had a number of shoftim. One of the heads of the shoftim was Rabbi Tehran. When Rabbi Tehran saw that in North America, people were becoming hesitant to eat the Muscovite, and in his own community, people were saying the Muscovite duck was not kosher, he decided that Rabbi Illoui had not presented the question correctly. He said, you cannot ask a question about a Muscovite duck, bichtav, with writing, you have to do it in actuality. And in 1904, he sent two Muscovite ducks, one survived, to Yerushalayim, to Rabbi Salant, and he said, is this a duck? And Rabbi Salant passed him that it was, and that it was kosher. The result of this whole controversy is that in Israel, there are many certifying agencies, and we have a number of their Tudat Hechsher, so they can't deny that they certify them, which certify Muscovite duck. In America, the tradition is not to certify Muscovite duck, and there is no conscious organization in America that we know of that certifies Muscovite duck. Really, truth be told, it seems that the Peking duck tastes a lot better than the Muscovite duck. But when you hybridize the Muscovite duck with the Peking duck, the hybrid, which is known as a moulard from the word mule, it tastes, I didn't eat it, but people tell me it tastes good. They're very expensive. But you can stuff them for foie gras. And for the fancy restaurants that want to have foie gras and all those other tzar bali chayim issue kinds of birds, the bottom line is that if you stuff geese, basically the way you make foie gras for those animal rights activists in the room is you take the bird, you hold it between your feet, and you stuff the food down its throat. There are a number of halachic shilas, which are very much in line with the abuse that the birds have, which is a lot of times the esophagus gets torn. The Muscovite, the moulard, when you stuff them, they're monstrosities, so to speak, that very rarely do their esophaguses tear. I myself have inspected over 200 esophagi of moulard ducks, and only three or four were actually torn in the stuffing, and these were fully stuffed moulards. So when people make, just economically, if people want to make foie gras, so they are going to do it with the moulard. All the restaurants that want to serve foie gras and other very, very fatty, nice stuff, they need to have the hybrid. And as we said, in Israel it was accepted as kosher. In Hungary, Paris, the Hashgacha agencies, which are aligned with those countries, accept them as kosher. In America, there's no one who certifies them. Now that I've told you the problem with the Muscovite duck, the other question is, so what defines a species of duck? If these two birds which look so similar are not identical species, then how do we define a species of duck? As Rav Nosson mentioned, we're very careful when we define a species of duck, and I want to just give you a quick tour of what we're trying to do in this presentation here. The one bird that's being very quiet is the mallard duck. It's in the purple cage on the other side of the wall, so no one confuses it with the Muscovite. The mallard duck, you see them in the parks, they have the nice green heads. Scientifically, and also if you take a look at the bird, there's not really much of a doubt. The mallard duck is the ancestor of all the domestic ducks we accept as kosher. Right now, the only domestic duck which we shaft commercially is the Peking duck, which we discussed. But there are other breeds which we would, but they don't taste as good, and it's not a commercial viable operation. If you take a look, and I encourage you during the break to come up and to really be ma'ayin, to look closely into the ducks, you'll see a number of ducks which are very similar to the mallard and to the Peking. You sort of have to imagine the mallard in white to understand the duck. So you have to remember what the Peking looks like, go over to the mallard cage, and you'll look and we'll see. There are some ducks which, at the OU, we either certify them or their eggs. In this cage over here, the tall duck, in the black cage, that's called an Indian runner duck. You should know it's a breed, not a species. It was selectively bred in Asia for 2,000 years for their eggs. These ducks, actually this one belongs to my son, but we have them here, and every single morning, as long as the lights are off, they lay eggs. they're considered to be higher, they produce more eggs than the best egg-laying chickens, and the eggs are a little bit better and bigger. And there are some commercial operations which, you know, the organic specialty food stores where you can buy only certified eggs from the Long Island Peking duck. When you look at it from a distance, it doesn't look like a duck. It's sort of standing sort of like a bowling ball pin. But if you look closely, you'll see that its beak, its feet, in fact, every anatomical part of that bird is almost identical to a bird except for the femur, which, due to selective breeding in Southeast Asia, is a little bit misplaced, and that's why it stands. The Asians wanted it that way because they were short on room and they wanted to store as many ducks as possible in a confined space. So they were selectively bred to go as a duck is horizontal to move vertical. Sharing the cage with the rudder duck is a white mallard. I'm not 100% sure that we got what we paid for, but theoretically it's close enough to a white version of the mallard. And if you take a look, you see the progression. You can see the mallard, you can see the white mallard, and then you see the Peking. I don't think anyone's going to have a doubt that the ducks are very, very similar. We also have, we had to put it a little separate. In the next cage, before you get to the chickens, you can't really see it, called a Laysian teal. The Laysian teal is an extremely endangered species. However, you're allowed to own them because the government made a mistake. There were, at one point, they were down to one bird. There was only one hen surviving. So the government declared it an extinct species. However, the hen, someone got it. It laid eggs, seven eggs. I don't know how many hatched, what the stats are, but there are currently about 1,000 of these birds. And since the government declared it was extinct, people were in possession of it, so there's some compromise reached. I don't know who did the negotiations, that you're allowed to own these birds even though theoretically they're an endangered species. So if you go to Laysian Island and you start hunting them, you're in big trouble. But if you happen to be a farmer, you can buy and sell them. There are about 500 in captivity, one of which we have right here. The reason why I think the Laysian teal is an excellent example, if you look closely, you'll see it has a lot in common with the mallard. However, it's much smaller. And if you look at the bird guides from the 70s, they identify the Laysian teal as not a species, but a breed of mallard that was on an isolated island, and you could read the description if you're interested. From a halakhic standpoint, we're not shechting them. It's an endangered species. We're not into eating it. But to understand the definition of a species, you can look at these birds, and you can see how the Laysian teal is so similar to the mallard, but yet at the same time, it's so different. And the same thing would apply to the bird that's sharing the cage with the mallard. That's a Philippine duck. You can see it on the colored pictures because neither of them are really standing tall. And the Philippine duck from the Philippines, if you didn't figure that one out, there are about 10,000 of them in the world. And again, it's a question scientifically whether or not it's a breed of mallard or whether or not it's just an independent species. The reason there are all these problems with the mallard is because the mallard has the distinction of all the species in the world of having the most recognized naturally occurring hybrids. The research I got was a little bit a few years ago, but it seems about 50 hybrids, including geese and all sorts of waterfowl, will hybridize with the mallard duck. So as a result, we don't really know, we can't use hybridization, we can't use normal terminology to determine what's a mallard, because a mallard will breed with anything that's approximately webbed feet and looks sort of like a mallard. As Rav Nassim mentioned, the result is that we're very, very careful when we shech mallard ducks or any wild ducks. And if you want the source book online, and we're selling these five that we have for $25 if somebody's interested. But you can get them online for free, so you don't really have to schlep this home with you. With the mallard, since we're not really sure if the mallard that someone gives us a duck that's approximately a mallard, if it's the result of a hybrid, it has to look precisely like a mallard. And that means that it has to have a yellow beak, it has to have the proper color feet, which you can see on that bird, orangish, yellowish. And if the mallard has a black beak, or if the mallard is discolored, we're nervous that perhaps it's not really a mallard, perhaps really it's a hybrid between the mallard and some other bird. Now, the Shaila has actually come to know you a number of times where somebody was raising mallards and they got a mallard that they have a cage with only mallards in it, or a pen with only mallards, and they saw that some of their mallards, the beaks started turning black. This is the result of the diet of the bird, which makes things a little bit complicated, because if you feed a mallard duck high protein, you're going to get one kind of color beak. If you feed it a different kind seasonally, you can get the beak to change colors. So of course, if you know that the bird is a pure mallard duck, and it has a few shinuyim, it doesn't look like a mallard duck, but it's impossible. There's no other birds flying into the cage and, you know, producing offspring, so you don't have to worry. But if you were to go out into the wilderness, and you don't know if it's a pure mallard, so if it doesn't look exactly like the mallard duck, so as Rav Nassim said, we don't accept it as kosher. And you can see, we have collected here, and again, it's available online, many, many shilas that were sent with to Europe on this issue. And of course, since we pass it like the Ramah, you should know that the Shulchan Aruch, the Machaber of the Shulchan Aruch, said that by ducks we can be very makil. And this was a point championed by the crazy place of Yonson Eibschitz. He wrote a whole kuntres called Kuntres Pnei Nesher, a brilliant 9-page essay where he explains how it's really with ducks we should be lenient, but Uvnei Yisrael Yotzim Biyad Ramah, the Jewish people always follow the Ramah, and the Ramah specifically writes with ducks we also require that there be a Mesorah, there be a tradition going back to ancient times that is kosher. If you take a look at the rest of the birds that we have here, and we're going to have a 5-minute break to give people a time to freshen up, you'll see that we have many. With the ducks, we have species. That's why we're talking the Muscovite duck, the Philippine duck, the Laysian teal. These are species of duck. Please stay tuned for Rabbi Mandel, who is going to be speaking about the birds that we have here and the identification of a breed. And just to get everybody excited, you'll see that a lot of, through selective breeding, there are many different breeds. The difference between a species and a breed is a species is genetically distant, that they don't readily hybridize, they don't readily breed together. Whereas a breed, it's the same bird, it just looks different. As Rav Nassim said, you have a man that's very tall and you have a man that's very short. The Mechtav Sofer says, so too you have in the animal kingdom. But of course, through selective breeding, you can imagine that you have a, if men that were only very tall, only, you know, were, I don't think I have to explain, but basically when push comes to shove, through selective breeding, people have created very, very interesting and exciting speech anomalies, and their impact on halacha. Please stay tuned for Rabbi Mandel, who will further discuss the issue. Thank you, and we'll resume in 5 minutes.